Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on predictions for 2010 when we come back. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, liberties, and our properties since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. Jesus of Nazareth held that same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Well, there are 64 of these life-threatening problems described in the Scripture detailing how this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide plan, and the Scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not just apathy and indifference. It's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. You know, this program, the Global 2000 New World Order Nightmare, I say it's time to prepare for it. Now, to do just that, why don't you call or write and ask for those 64 life-threatening problems? Send me a stamped, self-addressed envelope. And let's talk about formulating a real, meaningful, intelligent plan to survive this Global 2000 and these other 64 life-threatening problems called the Great Tribulation in the Scripture. Now, you can just call and order my free General Law CD package for openers. It didn't cost you anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Subsistence and Survival School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Hey, we're talking about predictions for 2010. Now, what we're doing here, not making predictions for the year past, that's 2020. We can all make predictions for 2010 today, but rather, these are predictions that were made in the early part of 2010. And then I said in July when I did this program, or June, I said, well, let's put this up on the shelf and then let's come back in 6 months and let's give these guys a grade and let's see how well they did in their prognostications for the future. Now, there's 23 of these guys. And yesterday, I peeled off six of them, a guy by the name of Bob Chapman, Gerald Celente, George Ury, Igor Panarin, Neither Corpse, and Leap. I don't know what Neither Corpse is and Leap, but it's an acronym, evidently, for there was one other here. It was called Webots, Webbots. Webots, and we took a look, three of them here. Bob Chapman got 28.5% correct. Gerald Celente, he got 0. George Ury, he got 50%. Igor Panarin, he got 0. Neither Corpse got 0. Leap got 42.8% correct. And Webots got 0. So in looking at 7 of these guys over here out of the 23, that's a third of them, they didn't do very well. Well, at least not so far. Now, it's not the predictions that they're making that are in error. It's the timing of their predictions. These guys are putting dates. They're telling you this is going to happen in the third quarter, fourth quarter. It's going to happen in 2010. And that doesn't happen. So as I pointed out last time, I said, now, if we look at history, all of these predictions are going to occur. How do I know that? Historically, it's always occurred in the past. But these guys are always wrong on the dates. Well, not quite always, you know, but that's their Achilles heel. It isn't the prediction that the economy is going to collapse. Because that's what happened to us in 1783, and that's what happens to all the nations that get into debt or debit financing. Every single time without exception. And now that we have followed Brazil, Argentina, Hungary, China, and Germany down the same road, I think it's pretty safe to bet that we're going into hyperinflation and a collapse of the economy, then a depression, and then war, because that's the order that this has always taken in the past, and it's probably the order that it's going to take in the future. I think we could be pretty safe in that. But I wanted to demonstrate that. So in the second program of the series here, I want to take you back to the Figge, the Figge address, or the Figge program. It's actually an offshoot from the Grace Commission in the early 1980s. President Reagan commissioned a group of people, just like President Obama commissioned a group of people with 18 members in it to find a way to control the debt, control the deficit. And they just made a report. This is not their final report, but they just made a report here the other day. Nancy Pelosi says it's dead on arrival. Nobody's going to follow it. They have to have 14 members vote for it to bring it up in Congress. They only got 10. They're four short. So it isn't going to happen. Well, I could have predicted that that commission was going to fail. Why? Well, because the Grace Commission failed. And why would we predict that the Grace Commission would fail? Because every commission that's ever been created for the purposes of deficit or debt reduction has always failed in the past. And that's because nobody wants the tough decisions that have to be followed in order to make it work. You see, to make our economy work, now that we've spent ourselves into bankruptcy, we have to face reality. We're broke. We're upside down. We got to take a drastic cut in our standard of living. You people don't want to face reality. You don't want to take a drastic cut in your standard of living. You do not want tax increases. Then you don't want services cut. That's what has to be done in order to balance your budget, and you're not going to do that. So you're going to continue on with the spending until it's imposed upon you. You see, you could come to the conclusion that you're bankrupt and that you're going into bankruptcy long before the credit card company cuts off your credit, long before the mortgage company forecloses on your house and the auto company repossesses your car. You knew that it was coming before that event transpired. You might have known about it 6 months before it happened, or a year. But you knew it was coming. Then, did you take the necessary action? Did you cut your expenses? Did you go out and get another night job? Did you put your old lady to work, bringing in a few extra bucks? Did you take a cut in your standard of living? Did you downsize your house and your automobile to live within your budget? No. So bankruptcy then was enforced upon you by outside forces. It was the mortgage company that forced you. It was the repossession of your car. It was the loss of your job, and so on. These things came down upon you, but you knew it was coming. And all of us here in America know. We have known for years that this is coming. In fact, President Reagan knew it was coming back in 1980 when he commissioned the Grace Commission report. Actually, it was commissioned about 81 or 82. Because America was in recession at the time, we had to do something. We were running up humongous deficits, and we were in debt by, pushing $1 trillion, I think, in 1980. $3 trillion by the time Figge came along. And they came back with a report, and they said, listen, our debt is manageable. We can pay the debt off. We can balance our budget, and we can pay our bills and service this debt. But here's what we've got to do. And when the report got to President Reagan and the Congress, they put the kibosh on the Grace Commission. They said, not by the hair on our chinny chin chin. Well, they didn't quite put it like Nancy Pelosi did. She said, this is debt on arrival. The president didn't say that. He said, well, we'll take this under advisement and just do everything we can to implement this program over here, blah, blah, blah. And then they went out. See, they told us everything that we wanted to hear. We're in favor of a strong dollar, and we want to balance the budget. You know, we want full employment and peace and prosperity. And they told you all the things that you want, that everybody's going to agree to. Then when they actually went out and put it into effect, they kept spending you further into debt. They didn't balance the budget, and they didn't promote a sound dollar. Now, this is the modus operandi of government has been now for the last, 100 years, going back at least to the turn of the century, you know. Teddy Roosevelt got the ball rolling. I'm not so sure that, was that President William McKinley. Now, he might have been in on the scam also, but when he was assassinated and Teddy Roosevelt took over, he was a progressive. He was a liberal Republican, Teddy was. And remember that Franklin was another liberal, Franklin. He was a Democrat. It doesn't make any difference. The Roosevelts are the Roosevelts. They're all insiders. But anyway, going back here to the Figge Report and the Grace Commission, this fella, Harry Figge Jr., Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Figge International Incorporated, founder of the Action Group to Save America's Economy. It's a little booklet put out by Figge. I've reported on this two or three times. And this speech is condensed from a series of lectures presented by Harry E. Figge Jr. at the Town Hall of Los Angeles, California, on June 27, 1988, the City Club of Cleveland, Ohio, on March 31, 1989, and the League of Women Voters, presented in Cleveland, Ohio, on July 26, 1990. So we're going to take a look here at the Figge Report. Now, what we're facing today, this global financial crisis, could have been solved in 1982, during the 1980s. We needed to take action. We needed to raise taxes, cut services and spending, balance our budget, and live within our means, and then put some in there for reducing the debt. We could have done all of that, but we didn't. And so now we have a result that came from those actions or those inactions. So we had a choice to make, and we made it. And now we're living with the results of that choice. If you like the global financial crisis and the status quo, well, you've arrived in heaven, son. You're right where you want to be. Now, if you're disappointed and you don't like the results of it, we should at least analyze what caused it, and then let's figure, is there a way out of this? I would contend, yeah, I'm happy as a clam at high tide. While America is going into insolvency, I'm not complaining. Americans had a choice, and they made it. I'm just not going to follow you. I'm not going into insolvency with you. I'm not going to practice the way of life that Americans have been practicing for the last 50 years. I got off that boat, and I'm happy that I did. And I would suggest that the rest of you that are still on the great ship America over there, listen to this report. And then mull it over a little bit and then ask yourself, do I want to stay on this ship? And, you know, if you do, well, you're already on it. Go back to your stateroom, go to bed. if you want to get off the ship, that's going to be a little tougher, because getting off of this sinking ship now is going to be a lot tougher than getting off of it in Ireland, you know, when it reached port. So the Figgy starts off and he says, tackle the debt before it's too late. Harry E. Figgy, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you today on the subject of the national debt. And I want to stress first and foremost that I'm a businessman. I've never been and never intend to be involved in politics. However, if you wonder why I'm up here, I really love this country, and because, as I tell people, where else but in the United States could a person from very humble means, whose father died when he was 16, follow his life plan and build two companies? And I'm here today because I fully believe that this great country of ours is heading into serious trouble. And because of the government's dangerous inability to reduce its debt or control ongoing budget deficits. I became involved in this issue quite by accident in 1982 when Peter Grace made me a co-chairman of the President's Private Sector Survey on Cost Control, also known as the Grace Commission. And as a result of that, I became privy to some information that I wished I'd never heard about, information that showed me how threatening our government spending policies are. So this past Tuesday, I met with several congressmen on the subject, including Congressman Dennis Eckert from Cleveland and Congressman Dick Armey from Texas, and I showed six different congressmen the debt and deficit projections for the next few years, and every one of them said, gee, I didn't know it was that bad. I didn't realize where we are headed. They had no idea that the ball game is going to be over in 1995. Now, boys and girls, I want to pause right there, and I want to point out that the Grace Commission and Harry Figgy thought 1995 the economy was going to collapse. The global financial crisis would begin. But it didn't happen in 1995. It didn't happen until 2008. Now, as we go through his speech and we take a look at the history behind the Grace Commission, everything that they said, all of their projections came to pass. It's all true, accurate, and correct. It's past history, and you can go look it up. All of their dates were in error. Every prediction that they made, that it was going to be by the year 1995 or 2000 or 1998, all proved to be false, which is exactly what happened with Y2K. This is the problem that you and I and everybody else faces out here. It's that when these people come to us, they tell us, here's what we can expect to happen based upon history and what's going on today. Then they attach a time frame to it, and their time frame always fails, and it always puts egg on their face, every single time without exception. I can't think of any of them that have ever been correct. And if it happens once in a while, and it actually did happen in that time frame, it's probably more by accident. I'll show you, you could flip a coin and get greater accuracy than you can by following these prognosticators. As we progress along here, I'm going to show you, flipping a coin will give you greater accuracy. That doesn't mean that the prognosticators are wrong about the predictions concerning the historical events like the fall or the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. And Gibbons pointed out, here are five causes of that. Debasing their money system was one of the causes. Excessive debt was another. Corruption in politics was a third. Decline of their religious and moral values was a fourth. When those events permeate a civilization, a nation, a country, a family, it's headed for decline and collapse. It'll fail. It always has, does now, and it always will. It's the way life is. Now, we can predict it. We can see it happening. What we can't predict is the time that it's going to happen. That's my point. That's what I want to emphasize. You're whistling Dixie here, trying to say that this is going to happen in 1995. Everything that Figgy said happened, but it was in 2008, not 1995. Now, Dick, this is Dick Armey, was an economics professor and is probably the most knowledgeable man in Congress on economics. After I showed him the projections, Dick said, "Harry, you just ruined my day." And I said, "Well, it's about time. Peter ruined mine in 1982, and I haven't had a good one since." Now, surveys today show that the national debt and the deficit are uppermost in the minds of the American people. Congress recognizes this, and they say that it was the savings and loan crisis that finally brought it home to the American people. But I say it was perfectly understandable all along, because the Americans have been struggling personally with debts and deficits and budgets for all of their lives, and they know what happens to them if they don't live within their personal income. So naturally, they begin to worry when they see a profitable country that is not living within its income, and has not lived within its income since 1952. So I want to put this massive problem into the context of the person in the street and show you why the government is headed into real trouble. Let's say that you have a net take-home pay of $1,000, and you take $100 of that $1,000 and you put it into some kind of a pension plan, like a Kroger, an IRA, or a 401k. The other $900 just makes ends meet. Now suppose somebody gives you free credit cards. They give you American Express, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, whatever you want. But you realize that you can't use these credit cards. Then, all of a sudden, you meet a very tall man with a long white beard, a big stovepipe hat, red and white striped pants, and a blue coat and stars all over it, and he says, "My name is Sam, Uncle Sam. I am a financial advisor, and I want you to follow my advice. I want you to use your credit cards. And when they bill you, just send them a 30-year IOU at 8% interest." And you say, "Yeah, but I have to pay that interest, even if they accept my IOU." And Sam says, "Do you remember that $100 you were putting in a pension? And we'll take that $100 and use that to pay the interest, and put an IOU in your pension. 20 years from now, you'll have 20 years of IOUs, but what do you care?" And you remind him, "Well, Uncle Sam, there's a difference between you and me. You've got a printing press in your basement which gives you unlimited credit, but I'm going to jail if I do that." That's why Americans are concerned, because they know we can't keep on going like this. And before I go any further, let me explain the difference between deficit and debt for those of you that might not be familiar with those two terms. The deficit is the shortfall that we have in any one year. If you take $100 billion and spend $110 billion, you get a deficit of $10 billion. Now, at the end of that year, you've got to do something with that $10 billion that you owe. So you move it over to your long-term shortfall, and that becomes your debt. Well, in 1982, the annual deficit was $128 billion, up from $4 billion in 1974. Now, the debt in 1982 was at $1 trillion. That was up from $484 billion in 1974. But it had taken us 200 years from the start of our republic until 1974 to create that debt of $484 billion. We had gone through World War I and World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, and we still had a very manageable situation. Since 1982, when the debt first hit $1 trillion, it has now tripled. It is now $3 trillion. So when Peter Grace called me and a number of others down to Washington in 1982, we were commissioned by President Ronald Reagan to find some savings in government. And I can tell you, it was like shooting fish in a rain barrel. We contributed $77 million of corporate money and about 500 employees. We found more than $424 billion in savings in 9 months. We could easily have identified over $1 trillion, but President Reagan was not interested in going any further. Of the $424 billion that we identified, Congress instituted $152 billion in savings by 1986. spread annually, that averages $38 billion in savings a year. But at the same time, President Reagan pushed through a $50 billion tax increase. Now, if you take the $50 billion of new revenue and the $38 billion that we saved, that's $88 billion, that should have gone to reduce the deficit, which at that time was $128 billion. So we should have dropped the annual deficit from $128 billion a year to $40 billion a year. But instead of doing that, the government says we ran a $152 billion deficit that year. So here's what the problem is. In the last 10 years, government revenue has risen at the rate of 8% per year, compounded. But expenditures have gone up 11% per year, compounded. Now, that doesn't sound like too much, but let me put that into perspective. Right now, the Congress has 116% more money to spend than they had 10 years ago. But they have spent 186% more money than they spent 10 years ago. So every time that you give Congress $1, they go out and spend $1.68. And I'll tell you what I learned in Washington. They not only don't understand this problem, they don't care about it. Well, let me pause right there, boys and girls. Put a little mark here in my margin. Your Congress is pictured as being a bunch of bumbling boobs who can't balance the budget. Ignoramuses. Now, do you believe for a minute that people like Ted Kennedy, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, are ignoramuses and stupid boobs? Do you believe that you get to be senator or president of the United States because you're an ignoramus? Boys and girls, these people go to Harvard and Yale and Princeton. These are the most educated people in America. These are the best and the brightest. Now, we haven't balanced our budget since 1952, but you can rest assured that President Carter balances his budget down on the farm in Plains, Georgia. But President Clinton can balance his budget with his family where he lives in New York. Now, these people know exactly what they're doing. They have an agenda. Their agenda is to spend the United States of America and all of the Americans into national insolvency. It's the goal. It's the plan. And it works perfectly. They're doing that. And it doesn't make any difference whether you vote in President Reagan, the Republican, or President Clinton, the Democrat, or President Nixon, the Republican, or President Johnson, the Democrat. These presidents since 1933 and these Congresses have done everything in their power to spend us into national insolvency and irrepayable national debt, and they have succeeded. It's done, past tense. You don't need to be worried or concerned anymore about if you don't vote this way or that way, you're going to get a bad result. You've already voted, they've already acted, and you've already got the bad result. That's where reality's at. When we're playing chess and you've lost your queen, it isn't that you're going to get your queen back. You're going to play the rest of this game without a queen. That's the way these pieces on the chessboard are arranged. That's too bad you lost your queen, but you should have thought of that before you made that last move. And the same thing is true here. You know, before we voted these people in years ago, you know, we should have taken a look at, well, where were we in 1970 and where were we headed? Where were we in 1980 and where were we headed? Somebody needed to wake up. If democracy, if voting is the solution, you needed to have done this, you know, years ago. Now, today, if you take a look at your debt position, your income, and your economy, you're insolvent and it's unable to pull itself out. God Almighty Himself couldn't save this economy. I know that's sacrilegious and it's blasphemous, you know, and blah blah blah. But boys and girls, when you get to a certain point, you know, that's it. When you're going down the Nile River and you get to Victoria Falls, and your boat is 30 feet from the edge of the falls, and the motor conked out, and your oars are broken, you can put your head between your knees and kiss your hiney goodbye. And in our case, our boat's already 30 feet past the edge of the falls. We're already 30 feet down toward the bottom. There's no going back. That ain't going to happen. What you need here is a parachute. Now, this thing is going to come to a climax. There'll be an end to this. We're going to go into hyperinflation and depression and national captivity, and all the bad things that can happen are going to happen to us. And what you and I need is, what are we going to do from here on out? You know, what's our move tomorrow and next month and next year? You're not going to save the United States. You're not going to save England or China. You're not going to make any change in the United Nations. But you could make a change in your own family. You can make a change in your own economic circumstances. There's a lot of things that you and I can do at our level. But you and I are going to have to make some hard choices and fast. Hard choices and fast. And the tragedy of it is, and my point that I wanted to make here, this problem was well known in 1982. And for Dick Armey to say, gee, I didn't know this, is disingenuous at best. The guy's a liar. He's either lying or he is so incredibly stupid that to vote for such an incredibly stupid person and put him in office, it reminds me of this woman, Sarah Palin. And the other day, they took a poll, and the majority of people said, Sarah Palin is not qualified to be president. Why? Because she's a hockey mom, I guess. I guess people who are qualified to be president need to go to Harvard, like President Obama. Or they need to go to Ivy League colleges, you know, like President Bush at Yale. But these people with their college degrees and all of their vaunted knowledge and all of their skills and ability, these are the people over the last 50 years. The intelligent, the intelligentsia, the educated. The people who are at the top of the game. These are the people that have led us into this morass. I can't believe for a moment that a hockey mom or a carpenter or a plumber could have done a worse job. In fact, if you had an incompetent boob like George Gordon or Sarah Palin at the pinnacle of power in the White House, we would make a mistake once in a while that would favor or benefit our country. Can you point to one historical event over the past 80 years that has benefited the United States of America? Send me a letter. Tell me one. One. No, these people are perfect. They have a perfect track record, just like Goldman Sachs. They're insiders. They have an agenda. They have a goal to spend us into bankruptcy, to destroy the nation. They have a 100% success record. I would contend with you that if you were to vote in a nitwit, a hockey mom, someone who is totally incompetent and incapable of being president of the United States of America, they could not have done this bad a job. And with that, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about the predictions for the year 2010 in retrospect, and I've interjected the Figge report, and I just made an observation here that the people who are running our Congress, the guys like Dick Armey, he's out now, but I'm pointing out that the people that are in, those people are not making a mistake in their voting. Nancy Pelosi is not making any mistakes. She's following her script perfectly. So is Harry Reid, and so is President Obama, and Bill Clinton. And the laws, the legislation, the socialized medicine that's just been enacted, the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act that President Bush put in, these pieces of legislation are designed to destroy America, to destroy our economy. And they're working. They're working perfectly. That's what they were designed to do, and that's what's happened. Now, we don't need to be concerned about, as we were in 1982, we could have in 1982, if President Reagan and the Congress and the people in office had said, okay, we're in trouble, but we need to get out of trouble. Let's go do it. And the Grace Commission identified the problem and said, here's what you do. And it probably wouldn't have even taken too much to have accomplished it. But they said, nope, we're not going to do that. Why? Why didn't they want to initiate a balanced budget and a debt reduction program? Because they wanted to spend us into bankruptcy. Out of chaos comes order, and the New World Order is in the offing. President Bush took over after President Reagan, and he's the guy that started using the term, you know, New World Order, New World Order, New World Order. He's one of the insiders. He's one of those working to bring about the New World Order. Now, the thing that finally brought me up short, Figge went on to say, and has ruined my last 8 years, were the projections that Peter got from his economist. And these numbers that I'm going to give you, I've had verified in the last 6 months by the Citizens Against Government Waste. So they're current. We were at $1 trillion in debt in 1982. That debt is going to go to $13 trillion by the year 2000. And we were at an annual deficit of $128 billion, and the deficit is going to go to $2 trillion. All right, so let me pause right there. Now, here it is. He said by the year 2000 that we'll have $13 trillion in debt. No, he missed it by 10 years. It's 2010 that we hit $13 trillion. And then he said we're going to have an annual budget deficit of $2 trillion a year. No, no, he missed that one. It's only $1.5 trillion a year. It's not up to two yet. Now, the truth of the matter is, he was correct on that second point. You see, we have this black box budget process. And we have a lot of budgetary items that aren't counted, such as the two wars that are going on over in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then we have a lot of operations that we spend money on, we borrow money, and they're not correct. They're not on budget. They're off budget items. And this year we're going to have a $1.5 trillion budget deficit. And our Fed chairman on November 3rd, 2010, said they're going to inject $600 billion. Well, let's see, $1.5 billion deficit plus $600 billion, isn't that $2 trillion? But the $2 trillion didn't occur in 2000, it occurred in 2010. So again, their projections were too soon. Putting a date on this destroys their credibility. So back in 1995, when this didn't materialize, we all said, well, look at this. Here's Bill Clinton. We're in boom times. And Bill Clinton says, we're on our way to paying off the national debt. I think it was Bill Clinton said that by the year 2012, the national debt will be paid off. And talk about green shoots in the 90s. I mean, the 90s were about like the roaring 20s. Everything was going along fine. It wasn't. And we were being lied to, and our government was taking the money out of Social Security. Remember what Figge said? You take it out of your savings. That's the way we financed government in the 1990s. You see, President Reagan raised the Social Security tax dramatically. Social Security was taking in money hand over fist. So they just took the money out of Social Security, operated governmental expenditures, and then ran up a huge debt. Social Security has no money in it. It has a lot of IOUs. It's got a lot of 3x5 cards that say, hey, we took $50 billion, we took $80 billion, we took $100 billion out of Social Security this year. And we spent it. It's gone. So Social Security is bankrupt. And in fact, today, they just announced that it was this year, about August, September, something like that, that Social Security is now taking in less money than they're paying out. It's insolvent. Medicare is insolvent. Everybody's in agreement. It's unsustainable. It can't continue on. But to say that it's going to collapse in 2010 is an error. To say it's going to collapse in 2011 or 12 or 13, because the powers that be have control of the printing presses and the money and the politics, and they have pulled one rabbit out of the hat after another. They've kept the ball in the air for a long time. Will they be able to do it forever? No. And they tell you plainly, it's unsustainable, it can't be done forever. But we can do it for one more day. We can do it for one more week. We can do it for one more month. But inevitably, the ball is going to fall out of the air, bottom line. Now, going on, he says, what does that mean? Now, let me graph the debt on my thumb and forefinger. I've got my thumb horizontal and my finger vertical. You've got 1776 way out here at the tip of my thumb. The debt line runs along my thumb absolutely flat until 1976. It gets up into the web of my thumb in about 1980, and it starts to come up. Then about 1995, we're at the first knuckle of my finger. Now you turn asymptotic. You start going straight up, and by the year 2000, you're straight up to the top. So what does that mean? It means that when we hit the $500 billion deficit here in about 1995, going to the $2 trillion deficit in 2000, we've lost our ability to control our economy by taxation, and we run the risk of something that I'm going to talk about called hyperinflation. All right, let's pause right there. Right there. The government today in 2010 is no longer running our government based upon taxation. You cannot control the economy by taxation. And they're not even trying. They're just borrowing the money. That's what Ben Bernanke on November the 3rd said. He said, we're going to go to quantitative easing. We're going to put another $600 billion into the economy. So that $600 billion is going to make all the money that's in the economy worth less. The more more of this money you create and put into the economy, well, then it inflates the money that's already in circulation, makes your money less. So between 1980 and 2000, the purchasing power of your dollar went down by 50%. You lost half of your purchasing power. Then between 2000 and 2007, you lost 30% of your purchasing power. And then every year that goes by, you lose more and more of your purchasing power. Now, here's an example. You all know that gasoline is now at $3 a gallon. That's not a bad price. Because gasoline, about 1950, was 30 cents a gallon, around numbers, and today it's $3 a gallon. That's up 10 times. Well, in 1950, you were making $1.75 an hour, and today you're making $17.50 an hour. It's up 10 times. The killer, though, is your income tax is it grows geometrically. See, you have this thing called the heavy progressive income tax. Well, in 1950, when you were making $1.75 an hour, you were paying the lowest rate of taxes about 10%. Today, you're paying the highest rate of taxes about 42%. Now, take 42% out of your $17.50 an hour. Your taxes are up 30%. So you actually have less dollars. And I worked this out for you the other day. I did a series of programs, and I said, in 1950, the money that you were making, that's 2,000 hours a year, times $1.75, gave you $3,500 a year. Your $3,500 divided by 0.30 said that you could buy 11,666 gallons of gas. Okay? So now we're making $17.50 an hour times 2,000 hours in a year, which is $35,000 a year, divided by $3 a gallon. That's 11,666 gallons of gas. See? It's exactly the same. And so we go home, and we're just real happy, and, oh, you know. But listen, in 1950, when you were buying gasoline, boys and girls, you had to pay your taxes. Remember that? So out of your $3,500, you paid 10% tax, $350. So you take $3,500, take away $350, and you had $3,150 left to spend for gasoline, divided by 0.30, and you could buy 10,500 gallons of gas. Got that? 10,500. Now, your income tax and Social Security are taking one-third of everything that you create and produce. In 1950, it took 10%. Today, it takes 33%. So now take your $35,000 today, and then let's times 0.33, and we have to pay $11,550 in taxes. So let's take our $35,000, Now let's take away 11,550. And we have $23,450 left over. Now with our $23,450 divided by $3 a gallon, we can buy 7,816 gallons of gas. 7,816 gallons. So with our inflation between 1950 and today, that's 60 years, our purchasing power has gone down by, let's take 4 there, 1 from 9 is 8, and 8 from 14 is 6, and 7 from 9 is 2. We've lost 2,684 gallons of gas in our purchasing power. Now, you just multiply that out by your automobiles and your homes and everything else, and we're living poorer today than we were in 1950. And that's what came from all of this inflation. The hidden tax. That's what inflation is. It's a hidden tax. And it's called that, the hidden tax. And the reason that it's hidden is because nobody can figure out what's happening. We can all see that we're living poor, and that's why your wife is out working along with you. And you still can't make ends meet. My dad was working in 1950. My mom stayed at home, and we didn't have any problems making ends meet. All right, now something drastic has changed here, and it's inflation. And it's going to get worse than that. We're headed toward hyperinflation. How do I know that? Because that's what happened to Germany, Hungary, Zimbabwe, China, Brazil, Argentina. You know, nearly everybody in the world, including yours truly, the United States of America, you know, it's been a long time, 1783, but we went through hyperinflation. And when we look through history, we find out that the cause and effect relationship's always the same. It's debt and overspending. Debt and overspending. I mean, you know, come on. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. If debt and overspending caused our hyperinflation back in 1783, did you think debt and overspending today is going to bring us peace and prosperity? I think we're going to get the same result. So, I think I can safely say that these prognosticators are right in their prognostications, but they're wrong in the date. And Harry Figge and the Grace Commission, they took the numbers. Now, if these numbers continue on like they are, the year 2000 is the big year. But you see, the people that are in government, the Dick Armies, and the President Bushes and Clintons, and the bankers on Wall Street, see, they can keep changing the target. They can keep changing the rules of the game. Congress can enact programs. And they do. And this new health care bill that they just enacted over here, that's not an accident. That's a tax increase. That's a big tax increase. The Bush tax cuts of 2003, that was a big tax increase. I've reported on that to you a time or two. The alternative minimum tax kicked in. Now, we've got to have some more big tax increases. But accompanying that, you've got to have some big spending cuts. Now, they're increasing your taxes, but they're not cutting spending. They're spending more. And, in fact, they have to spend more because this is a debt economy, a credit debt economy. You have to keep putting more into the economy. And they are. But the ultimate end to that is that it blows up in your face at some point in time. You go into hyperinflation. We ultimately have to go back to zero COD and start the game over again. And boy, that's going to be a traumatic experience. Really traumatic experience. If we could avoid that, we ought to. Now, we haven't. We're not going to. And so, you know, you and I need to get ready for it. I'd say, now back in 82, I said, well, I've got some time. We've got some time, and nobody's going to be this stupid. We're going to get people to understand this thing, and I'm very sorry to tell you that as I stand here in 1990, we're somewhere between 1990 and 93 in our deficit projections, a little ahead of target. I was with Senator Robert Dole the other day. He just came from the White House budget negotiations, and he said, we didn't make any progress again today, but we will. Now, you've heard about Graham Redman. It used to be Graham, Redman, and Hollings, but Senator Hollings said he wanted a divorce from the bill because it was such a travesty. Graham Redman originally said we would have a zero deficit in 1991, but revised that to $60 to $65 billion deficit a couple years later. Now, the reason Congress runs around like chickens with their heads off right now is technically, unless they get a budget agreement, they've got to cut $100 billion out of the budget this year, because they're at $168 billion. The thing that I want to tell you is that $168 billion you hear is a travesty. It's a lie foisted on the American people. Well, my God, are you surprised that our government lied to us back in 1990? Boys and girls, the government's been lying to us now for the last 80 years. They keep telling us that we're going to balance the budget. We're going to balance the budget. We're going to cut the deficits. We're going to cut the deficits. And we're for a strong dollar. And then when they go to Washington, they spend you into bankruptcy. The budget deficits go up. The overall debt goes up. And the dollar gets weaker. Now, if you take a look at the purchasing power of a dollar today compared to 1930, you've only got 2 cents left. You know, in 1930, 2 cents would buy what one paper dollar buys today. 2 cents would buy what a dollar buys today in 1930. So you've lost 98% of your purchasing power. Is that going to change? No. It's going to get worse. You're going to lose the last 2 cents that you've got. So if you've got anything left to save, now's the time to get after it and start saving it. Now, the thing that I want to tell you is that the $168 billion a year is a travesty. It's a lie foisted on the American people. Now, remember all those IOUs that you were peeling out to your pension fund and your credit card fees? Government doesn't count those as a part of the cash deficit. So we have, for 6 years, run an actual deficit in the U.S. government of over $250 billion a year. And we're running between $360 and $435 billion today. So let me explain that to you. You start with Graham Redman. That's $168 billion. Now remember the credit card example? When you took $100 away from your Kroger or your IRA and then you sent it, you put in an IOU? Well, the government's doing that exact same thing to the 9 trust funds, including Social Security, military pensions, railroad pensions, and the postal pensions. And Uncle Sam is taking $120 billion in those trust fund surpluses and replacing that with IOUs instead of funding them with cash. They're funding them with federal deficit, and they don't count those IOUs or the interests on them. And when those IOUs start coming due, the government's going to owe trillions to Social Security, which will be supporting more retirees with fewer workers. And that, boys and girls, has been going on for at least 20 years. And to say that Dick Armey and Ted Kennedy and Barack Obama and Bill Clinton didn't know that, those are the ones that designed it and engineered it. You didn't know it. And I didn't know it, but our political leaders all knew it and created it. Hey, I'm out of time here, boys and girls. I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, there's the signal. Says time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll take it up again tomorrow night, same time, same station. Until then, we want to say thanks for listening, everybody, and good night.